If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, we're spicing up season two of Deep Space Nine like a spouse that's come home with a sex swing.
Yeah.
We've introduced the idea of a board game to our podcast. And
gamification is really the future, Adam.
It's one of the ways we're disrupting our own show, right?
Yeah, we've pivoted to board game.
You want to disrupt the dominant podcast paradigm. And here we are by landing on the Coco Nono square, right? Yeah.
Like if you're a McElroy, you make an amazing Dungeons & Dragons podcast that has millions of listeners. If you're Ben and Adam, you make a crappy board game in Google Docs and force yourself to drink to excess.
That's us. You ever feel like we're getting in our own way?
No.
Before we start the show, in case anyone would like to participate with us in this, maybe we could talk about what we're drinking for today's pod.
So we decided, since Coco Nono is not a real drink, we just decided to go with a classic coconut-based cocktail. And what we're drinking today is a painkiller, which is 2 ounces of Pusser's rum. I think neither of us is using that. We're substituting either Demerara or spiced rum. Right. But a brown rum, you know, not white rum. And then 4 ounces pineapple juice, ounce of orange juice, ounce of cream of coconut. And you throw all that in a blender with some ice and blend it up, baby. And then we put them in these beautiful coconuts that our friend Ann Kilzer sent us.
Yeah, I did a little bit of a variation on that painkiller. I love a painkiller. I think you and I have had many of them together, even. But you mentioned that cream of coconut is really sweet, and you're not wrong about that.
Yeah.
So I actually substituted coconut milk entirely for that cream of coconut.
Oh,
it really knocked down the sweetness that I thought I was going to get. And I also whipped it in a blender.
Yeah.
Because that's fun. So what I've got on my desk is, like, I've got one half of Ann Kilzer's coconut bra holding part of my drink. And then much like when you get a milkshake at a diner, you get, like, the metal tin
the
back.
Sidecar, yeah.
I've got the sidecar of more than half of what I made in the blender. So
yeah.
I've got a lot to go through.
I pre-mixed 4 of these, and so I'm gonna have to run and get an extra when the time comes.
You're saying I'm going to be doing the credits to the show later? Ben in absentia.
Yeah, RSVP.
Yeah.
Not in absentia, in memoriam.
Right. That's too bad. I'll carry the flag for you, Ben.
Thanks, dog. It's a great drink. I did a similar thing. I did an unsweetened coconut cream, and I added a little simple syrup to it myself to make it a very lightly sweet coconut addition, but not the like sweetened crema de coco, like your Coco Lopez is way sweeter than sugar syrup even. It's crazy.
It's really like Mario Lopez. It's like just too sweet. You want to level that thing out a little bit. I think that's really smart. That's coming from a guy who has reps on a real live cocktail podcast. Like that's an experienced move right there. It's a lot like if you oversalt food, you can't take it out later. Like if you oversweet a cocktail, you're really kind of stuck unless you want to dilute it out.
Right.
So,
add lots and lots of the other ingredients, you know, add more booze and more everything else. So anyways, if you're going to go on a date with Christy Henshaw on the holodeck, you could do a lot worse than this painkiller recipe.
Yeah, it's the truth. It's really good. Good call on the painkiller, man.
But no weird, like, Russian violinist, right? That's not a good move. Christy's not gonna enjoy that.
No, like, know your audience.
Read the room, Jordy.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I'm on memory alpha.
Uh-huh.
It says, a Coco No-No is typically coconut milk and gin served in a hollow half of a coconut shell. That sounds terrible.
Do you have those ingredients?
I guess I do.
What's the proportion?
It does not say here.
I'm going to go up and make an ounce of gin, ounce of coconut milk, and I'm going to come back. You want to do the same?
God damn
it. Let's taste test this shit.
All right. I feel like...
Oh, no!
It's becoming a little bit more clear why this date did not go super well.
This is a drink that looks as bad as it tastes also. Mixing it in the glass was a real, like, what would happen if you poured glue into water situation?
This has the consistency and appearance of, like, ostrich cum.
It's a cocoa, oh no.
And flavor-wise, not far off from ostrich cum either.
It has a really weird smell. Like, it does not smell like gin or coconut milk.
Right, it's like when you eat a bunch of asparagus and then you pee. It doesn't smell like pee or asparagus. It smells like something else.
You know, I tried it again, and I feel like I've had cocktails this bad before.
Yeah?
But I've probably blocked them. Like, they're probably the cocktails you make for yourself in college when you don't know how to make cocktails. Like, what are the things that I can get from 7-Eleven?
Right.
And everything is a half and half. Like, I went through years that way. Like, it's always half liquor, half mixer, right?
Yeah.
Not always.
No. The saddest thing about this drink, Adam, is that I'm probably going to finish it.
Oh. I'm not.
I don't know if you have this. I have, like, this really, like, almost pathological aversion to waste, where, like, if I cook myself a big meal and it's bad, like, this happened to me the other night. I cooked myself, my wife was out having dinner with her folks for the evening.
How you managed to wiggle out of that dinner is a story for another time, I guess.
So I went and bought a fancy pork chop, and I cooked it for myself. And as I was eating from, like, one side toward the other, you know?
Uh-huh.
And as I got closer and closer to the bone, the more I suspected that this meat had gone bad.
Oh, no.
And it was, like, so... Like, I took so many more bites than I should have at that point. Like... I was like, I feel like this part's probably okay, but, like, a little bit further, maybe not so much. Whatever, I'll try it. You know, like...
Ben, meat isn't like cheese. You can't just cut around it.
I live in a world where you can, and I also spent, like, $17 on this piece of meat, and I didn't want it to go to waste.
Oh, And did you get the grumblies after?
I have a very ironclad tum-tum, and I did not suffer any consequences.
This is the one of the ways that you are yin and I am yang. Like, digestively, we are not simpatico. Like, I wish we were roommates so that we could time our periods. Like, I want my tum to be more like yours, Ben.
I think what we would have to do is sleep in the same bed so that our colon flora would cross-pollinate.
I really like how we tour and that we never talked about it, but we have always gotten separate hotel rooms. And now, like, that's what we do. We have not and will not discuss it.
I was telling my wife about how we tour and how, like, we barely talk to each other most days when we're not on stage. she thinks that we are so weird.
You talk about your own pathology. Like, I pathologically do not want to kill this goose that we've created on accident to the degree that, like, I won't even give it affection out of the danger of, like, lennying it to death like a fucking rabbit.
Yeah, you don't know your own strength.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is why you're such a terrible father.
I think the disillusion of most of my friendships can probably be tracked back to that feeling. There's something profoundly wrong with me, Ben.
Well, Adam, we've got ourselves a very silly premise for the episode today, which is that we are going to drink a bunch of Coco No-Nos. We wound up randomly selecting this for a pretty serious episode. Do you want to get into it?
Yeah, I think we should. Let's go ahead and get into season 2, episode 5, Kardashians.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
I feel like we take Kevin everywhere with us. Mm-hmm. When there's a sibilance in the title,
yeah,
we're obligated at this point.
Right. So, we're retconning a little bit here that over the, like, intervening 20 episodes or whatever, Garrick and Bashir have developed a regular breakfast hang type relationship.
Really, Doctor? Must we always play this game?
I could have used this as a cold open for all 20 episodes.
Yeah.
How great would that be?
That'd be fun. It's something I kind of covet, too. Like, I go get a coffee at a place near my house most days. If I had some folks there that I could, you know, predict seeing and having a hang with, I feel like I'd like that.
I think all I've ever wanted to be is a regular at a place.
Yeah.
But it's in such contrast to the other feeling I have, which is, like, I want to be left alone most of the time.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I want to be greeted like Norm from Cheers, but then I just want to be alone.
Yeah. Don't you see that I have these headphones in?
This scene is a real feast for the eyes, Ben. Did you see the background actors behind Bashir?
Yeah, I did, with the crazy computer heads.
I was trying to figure out what their deal was, because on the one hand, they look like they're wearing manhole covers as headwear.
I feel like they are Wisconsin sports fans, but from the future, you know, and it's techno cheese that they're
wearing. One of them had straps, and I was wondering if that was their luggage, and culturally that was just how they carried it.
Oh,
did you think it was loaf?
No, I think it's a hat.
Yeah, it's got to be a hat.
It's got a computer hat.
I don't want to be heteronormative about what I'm seeing back there. But it's pretty silly, Ben. Yeah. It's super silly, and it's so silly they don't even have the confidence to put them in the foreground and in sharp focus. Like,
right.
They're always in the deep background.
Bashir has gotten in this retroactive situation where he and Garrick are always good time buddies. Bashir's confidence level has really come a long way. Like, he is really trading jabs with Garrick and is not nervous, and, like, is very at ease with the kind of subterfuge and subtlety with which Garrick communicates.
I sort of got a Frenemies vibe from them too.
Right.
You know, in that they take the piss out of each other back and forth, but they go a little harder than Friends Only.
Right.
Like there feels like there's a little bit of animus there that fuels some of that stuff.
Yeah, it's like tennis, like they're rallying at the tennis court, you know. It's they're not keeping track of the points, but they are keeping track of the points a little bit.
I really like Garrick, and I'm glad he's back.
Yeah. Garrick is fun. So they spot this group of people coming out of an airlock, and it's a big fat guy with light switches all over his jacket and Nilla wafers on his head.
Is he a great big fat guy with light switches all over his jacket?
Does he have a head that's covered in Nilla wafers?
Would you help me move my couch?
Would you eat my head cookies? I'd eat my head cookies so fucking much.
It's like he's got sardine cans all over him.
Yeah. And the two people he's with is a Bajoran dad and a Cardassian boy. But the Cardassian boy is wearing a Bajor getup. I think he might even be wearing the knitted coat thing that Kira was wearing when she was having her monastery hang.
Oh.
I'm guessing that's the same piece of wardrobe.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time we've seen a Cardassian youth.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Was there a Cardassian baby at some point?
Maybe.
Well, anyways, they all go sit down in the same cafe that Bashir and Garrick are sitting in, and Garrick is quite fascinated by the fact that there's a Cardassian boy, and goes up and really creepily compliments the dad on his fine young boy.
What a handsome young man you have here.
And puts his hand on the kid's shoulder, and the kid very reasonably defends himself from this creepy man who's touching him by biting Garrick on the hand.
Yeah, I gotta say, Ben, I was on Team Cardassian Kid right away.
I cannot imagine as a parent just being in public with my child and somebody coming up and putting their hand on that child's shoulder and saying, "What a fine young boy."
Yeah, it's fucked up.
How do you read this? Is this the writers like not knowing what an appropriate way of interacting is? Or is this like alien, like... Would this be appropriate on Cardassia, but it's not appropriate on Bajor?
By the end of the episode, I think this would become more clear. But after having seen the episode and coming back to the beginning, I think that Garrick is playing his story 40 moves ahead. And part of me thinks he wants this to happen.
Wow. So he's
like, what do you think is going to happen when you like punch a pit bull in the mouth? Like he knows culturally who this kid is. We find that out later.
Right.
What does he think is going to happen when, as a Cardassian, he rolls up to him in the Replimat and puts a hand on his shoulder? I think he's hoping for this.
Yeah. That's I like that read. Yeah, the idea of a character who can, like, spot a kid like this and throw this amount of intrigue into motion by just being a little bit creepy is fun, because this sets off like an international incident.
Yeah,
God, yeah. This fucking gin and coconut milk shit is so ass.
I have let mine be, and it's already turned into salad dressing. Like it is reverted back into its component parts.
Ugh.
Not good, Ben.
No.
I'm also like, I'm clean plate club on food, but
yeah.
I'll leave a quarter of a beer behind. I'll leave a cocktail behind if I don't like it or if it's not good. I don't have the same compulsion as you with the drinks.
I gotta finish it because it's so expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Real aversion to waste.
I want to like Garrick, and I don't like that he keeps doing creepy shit.
Yeah, let's get some fun Garrick that isn't involved in being a total creeper.
Well, by saying that, I'm saying, like, you can have an inciting incident without him being a creep show about it.
Yeah. Yeah, was there a way he could have played this that would have set everything off in a way where it wasn't a gross, you know, breaking the touch bubble and being too familiar with a stranger's child situation?
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of social interactions that can go bad in a public place. I mean, if they're in a place that serves food, I could imagine that they could get in line at the Replimat and have words with each other, or like Rugal could regard Garrick's order in a condescending way, and then that could start an argument.
Right.
Like, it feels like something argumentative could have the same amount of weight as boy bites man.
Like, we come to know that Rugal really hates Cardassians, but I guess Garrick can't possibly know that yet, right?
Or does he?
Hmm.
Like, I keep going back to the idea of, like, there's the public Garrick, and then there's the private Garrick that seems to know so much more than meets the eye.
Yeah.
He's like a Cardassian that can turn himself into a tape recorder. Who is that? Soundwave? That's Soundwave. Yeah. After the opening credits, there's a thing. There's a moment that I love, Ben, and I don't know if you notice these the way I do, but like when an actor's credit lines up with their appearance on screen in a fun way, like that seems totally happenstance.
Right.
Mark Alamo, like his credit shows up the moment before he appears on FaceTime with Sisko as Dukat.
Cool.
Does that have a name? It feels like it happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens enough that I notice it, and it feels like it should have a name.
Bingo?
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. So Bashir, like, runs up onto it, into the op section and is like, guys, get a load of this. The tailor just got bit by a kid.
Another unsatisfied customer.
He always cuts the pants too long.
He was being a total creep.
And Cisco's like, you're the doctor. What are you doing here? Yeah. You were with him.
Yeah, and like Odo's already out the door, and that's basically the last we see of Odo.
Right. He goes audio only the rest of the ep. In another, I guess, cash-saving move?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Kira and Dax are also basically not in the episode. Like, they have, like, two or three lines each.
That's a single day for both of them.
It seems like Kira would have a lot of feelings about this, right?
I found myself really missing her part of the story.
That said, it's a pretty dense episode, so it might have had to be a two-parter if they'd given Kira a really big storyline. Sisko has literally just gotten this download from Bashir, and he walks into his office, and Gul Dukat is there on FaceTime, having gotten briefed on the exact same thing. Like, Gul Dukat seems to have known this before Sisko, even, maybe.
It's as if the cameras that we've asked Odo to install have been installed by Gul Dukat. Like, they already exist, they're just going to one place, and it's not Odo's office.
Dukat's watching all these episodes.
Yeah.
Well, what comes out of this is that there are dozens of Cardassian war orphans still on Bajor. Like, Cardassian kids that got left when the occupation packed up and went home.
Do you want to take that again? Saying the portmanteau that is right there. It's right there, Ben. They're warfins! Warfins!
I mean, if anybody's a warfin, it's Worf.
Right. If anyone's a warfin, it's Alexander, who has a dad, but not really.
I've dabbled in wordplay, Adam, but I'll leave mostly that to you.
It's the one thing I know how to do on this show.
The noise that Dukat is making is that he, like, is personally really upset about this war orphan situation and is looking for ways to solve it.
And as with everything Ducat related, you can't really be sure if what he's saying is what he means.
Yeah, assumes that there's an ulterior motive.
It's as if he's a Romulan. It's always three-dimensional chess with Ducat.
Mm-hmm.
So the backstory with Rugal is that he's a war orphan. He went to an orphanage and then was adopted by Bajoran parents, and these parents, and his dad specifically, who we've met on the station, has sort of programmed him to hate Cardassians.
Yeah, he's a...
And so that was the reason that he bit Garrick in the Replimat, is that he fucking hates Cardassians and everything they stand for.
Do you know how many Bajorans the Cardassians murdered during the occupation? Over 10 million.
Right.
He's going to Bajoran schools and hearing about the atrocities, and he's like, fuck these people. I may be racially Cardassian, but I'm culturally Bajoran.
Yeah. He strongly identifies as Bajoran, having, like, basically no connection to anyone from Cardassia. Like, Garrick might be the first Cardassian he's ever seen, you know, outside of the other Cardassian orphans.
Right.
Gul Dukat. And so they, because of Dukat's FaceTime, they have to start this investigation. And, like, the first person they talk to is the dad. And the dad really defends his decision to raise Rugal the way he has been raising him.
We told him the truth, Commander. The truth about what Cardassia did to Bajor.
He seems like one of the more interesting characters caught up in this whole thing. And he unfortunately gets two scenes almost back to back and then he's gone.
Right.
But I wanted to know more about his deal because...
Yeah, do they have like a really loving and affectionate relationship? Like that would have been interesting when to know, you know?
I can't decide whether or not he raised Rugal... like at him as a form of, I don't know, revenge.
Right.
Or if he's raising him out of love in the best way he knows how, in a Bajoran tradition that just happens to hate Cardassians as a rule. Like his motivation could be more interesting, but we just don't know exactly what it is and that's never resolved.
Right.
Not only is it never resolved, but by the time the episode resolves, we never see the consequence for him.
Yeah, like if he had been like really torn up by the way it resolves, it would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
So the next person they talk to is the guy with all the sardine cans on his jacket. And this dude has a kind of weird story. Like he's like really good friends with the dad, but also thinks the dad is abusive because of the way Rugal's been raised to hate Cardassians.
It must be torture for that boy living like that.
There's another plot hole here, too, which is like, I have no idea why these two are friends.
Yeah.
It like, even a single sentence of dialogue would have helped.
Right.
Like, Rugal's dad doesn't like to gamble, so he bankrolls... Zolan, so he can win at Dabo. Like, anything here would be useful to tie them together, but there's... Or, like, they're neighbors. Tell me they're neighbors, even.
Right.
But they don't even say that.
Yeah. Did you interpret those Nilla wafers on top of this guy's head as part of his head, or as, like, some kind of yarmulke or something?
Yeah.
Because it's like, he's got, like, a ring of hair, but then there's, like... It looks like, you know, when you slide open a package of Nilla wafers.
And I wonder, like... if that's his brains.
Maybe that's why he's so good at Dabo. He can see all the angles. Yeah. His brain's huge.
Here's a reason why we bring up the character of Zolan like we do, is that he's basically the only witness to their relationship. And he, as much as Rugal biting Garrick, is kind of another inciting incident.
Right.
He's the only one who goes out and says, yeah, something's fucked up with father and son over there. Maybe you should look into that.
Yeah, but also I'm like helping the dad try and get a job. Like, what's the...
Yeah.
It's complicated.
And based on one person's accusation, like it spins the entire story out from there. Bashir takes this knowledge to Sisko.
Yeah.
And now it's actionable.
Yeah, and they separate Rugal from his adoptive Bajoran father.
Go on, Rugal. We'll talk tomorrow.
And put him in probably the worst household on the station that he could possibly be put in. The house of Miles Edward O'Brien, noted Cardassian racist.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
God, it really feels like I'm hating the episode, but this is another, like, why else do you do this except to choose the biggest conflict instead of choosing the truth of the character or the place?
Yeah, this is a choice a writer would make, not a choice that, like, an actual station administrator would make.
And I think it's really interesting that, like, Rugal is taken away from his dad, not because he assaulted someone in public.
Nobody's accusing you of a crime, Rugal. You're not being arrested.
But it's just the idea that his dad may be programming him.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, like, the weird overtones of the, like, diplomatic needle that Sisko is trying to thread. You know, he's trying to keep the Cardassians happy and the Bajorans happy, and that is not necessarily easy given the scenario.
And because you can't take a piss on Deep Space Nine without Gul Dukat seeing how your dick is, they get Dukat back on the FaceTime to talk about why the hell there are these orphans on Bajor and why. And Dukat kind of demurs. He's like, look, I was involved. I was part of the occupation, and it's a real sad tragedy that we left these kids behind. I don't like it any more than you do, but I think there's something we can do to fix this. And Bashir kind of walks into ops and interrupts Sisko on the FaceTime.
I have a question.
Which creates a fun production thing. Like, when you see Dukat look to the left.
Right. There's eyeline. Like, it's not FaceTime. It is like, it is some kind of 3D television situation.
That's fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a... It is, I feel like it's the right thing in television, but it's also, it's got the same problem as the hologram FaceTime that they have on Discovery, where, like, characters are, like, walking around and sitting on chairs as holograms, and it's like, so what, are you in a room that is configured exactly the same as this room somewhere? Like, what is that?
Right, and so Bashir, finding Dukat's answers unsatisfactory, tells Sisko that he's lying. And Sisko rightfully is like, how do you know that? And Bashir says that Garrick told him. And Garrick becomes the second witness to this whole thing. So far, the entire story hangs on Garrick's word and Zolan's word.
Right. Garrick and Zolan, the two most trustworthy characters the show has ever introduced.
Right.
So Garrick's like, the pitch that Garrick has made to the doctor is that there's something fishy about the idea of Cardassian war orphans in the first place, because Cardassians are so meticulous and detail-oriented. They're real, the Adam Pranikas of space.
Fuck you.
Why? That's not an insult.
Ben, we need a little more trust but verify, I think. Right?
So, yeah, like, Sisko is not psyched that Bashir broke in on the FaceTime there, but I think he's intrigued by the yarn that Bashir is spinning, but wants he does want to, like, run some of this down and make, like verify it for themselves.
The reason Kira isn't in ops is because if she were, she'd be saying nothing but, what the fuck? Really? Like, she'd be a great viewer proxy right now.
Yeah, she's really stuck in the back. She's really been stuck on the sidelines in this episode. It sucks.
Yeah.
And stuck on the sidelines so that we could have scenes like the next one, which is Keiko... has been hanging out with Molly and Rugal all day, and O'Brien comes home to find out that his daughter has been playing with this Cardassian and has, like, a racism tantrum.
Gentle was bred out of these Cardassians a long time ago.
That Keiko very deftly scolds him on.
That was a very ugly thing you just said.
And then she pulls some Zabu meat stew out of the replicator. And she is the only one that is down to try this.
Here's one thing I want to ask you in a delicate way is because Keiko is the audience for O'Brien's Cardassian racism.
Right.
And the actress who plays Keiko, Asian, does that help reinforce how fucked up O'Brien's racism is? Because he's saying something like that in front of her? I felt that way.
I don't know. It's hard to know in the context of the 24th century, right? Because like the stated reality, not necessarily the depicted reality, but the stated reality is that racism and sexism have been defeated at this point in human history. So the idea, like, you know, like they on TNG always run into situations where they like are in the holodeck in the past or on some planet that has different social mores, and they're like surprised and perplexed by sexism or racism.
Yeah.
So like, and those are Starfleet officers who are trained to be involved in, you know, alien species. Keiko's just a botanist.
I mean, on the one side, what O'Brien said is super fucked up.
Yeah.
But on the other side, in a practical sense, like, it's not fun to come home from work to that kind of surprise. And so that doesn't forgive O'Brien's racism.
Yeah.
But, like, it is a big fucking surprise when he comes home to dinner and he sees someone that he's been at war against.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's cool that Keiko didn't at least prepare him for that. I'm not saying that to forgive what O'Brien said, which is fucked up, and I'm not saying that to hate on Keiko, but like practically there's a way that you can make that better.
Yeah.
And like everything else between Keiko and O'Brien, they don't choose the softest path.
Here's a question. Is the stew gross, or is O'Brien's racism and Rugel's self-loathing so strong that they don't like it because it's a Cardassian thing? Because Keiko seems to like it.
I feel like Keiko's eating it at O'Brien.
O'Brien also, like, we know that O'Brien does not have a terribly adventurous palate.
I don't think we've ever gotten a scene where he's enjoyed Keiko's cooking or choice at the replicator.
No, he only enjoys Irish food.
Yeah, it looks like a real cream of green mushroom soup that they're eating. And neither O'Brien or Rugel are willing to engage the Cardassian culture culinarily.
Right.
And they sort of cheers their bowls of stew in pushing them away from themselves.
Yeah. Rugel comes back like late at night, I think it is, and O'Brien is up burning the midnight oil, doing some computering, and Rugel is like, appropriately scared about the future. He's like a young kid who's been separated from his dad, and like, it seems like what's going to happen to him has been not only taken entirely out of his control, but also nobody is really talking to him about it. And so he's really worried. And O'Brien is not the guy that you necessarily want to be there to ask for some comfort in a situation like that. But Rugel doesn't have anybody else. And this is like maybe my favorite scene in the episode, because it's sort of O'Brien like having to show some humanity to this kid, and in so doing, like unraveling some of the bad stuff that he has inside of him.
Kids talk to each other so much differently than kids talk to adults that I really missed Jake Sisko in this episode.
Yeah.
Because I think Rugel would have talked to him far more differently than he talks to someone who clearly hates him.
Yeah.
Like, this is not the time for an O'Brien breakthrough, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is not going to happen here.
It's not going to happen here, but it does kind of like lay some interesting groundwork, I think.
I really like that O'Brien speaks to him practically about like Rugel's own agency and what Rugel may or may not feel with regard to that.
Right.
Like O'Brien's actually a very good counselor in this moment.
Totally.
He's like, you don't just have to go with where the wind blows. You can actually choose a side here.
And that's like exactly what this kid needed to hear.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail. Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
So the next scene, Bashir is sleeping in his bed and kind of tossing and turning and wakes up, and Garrick is in his room.
Did I ever tell you I avoided being peed on in college by a roommate?
No.
I was roommates in freshman year with someone who was a piss drunk.
Oh, like a guy who came and thought things were bathrooms that weren't bathrooms?
Yes, exactly. And so after a particularly crazy bender, we had retired back to the dorm room to go to what I thought was a restful sleep. And a couple hours later, I don't know if you have one of these, I sure do, but like my proximity alarm went off as a person. Like I was in dead sleep,
yeah,
and I could feel that someone was near. And so I woke up to my roommate like standing over my bed. My roommate standing over my bed, like he had gone to sleep in his clothes, I think, just as I have, and was like undoing his buckle.
Wow.
And I was like, name redacted, what are you doing?
What are you doing here?
Like I got out of bed and I flipped on the lights, and he was still asleep. He was sleepwalking.
Whoa.
as a piss drunk. And this is a thing, like, if you know any piss drunks, you know that this is what happens. He was animated but asleep. And so he did not respond to my questions and instead continued to do the thing that you do before you pee.
Right. Prepare himself for bathroom time.
I took him by his shoulders, by the back of his shoulders, and turned him away from my bed and my stuff.
I led him by his penis to...
I aimed him instead at his stuff. Which, at the time...
Oh, man, you're not a good friend.
Ben, like, his dick was out. Like, there was, like, the timer had run out. This was about to flow.
So it was just about... mitigating damage.
I'm not going to take the fucking piss bullet for him. If he's going to piss in the dorm, he's going to piss on his own stuff.
You could have just like clapped your hands in his face or something, though.
I tried all of that.
Wow.
He was someone who was hypnotized in a way that like only the magician could undo. Like he was that entranced.
Wow.
So I flipped him around and he pissed, and I went down the hall, and I like woke up a couple of friends. I was like, my friend and roommate like is in trouble. I was upset, but I was not angry at him. I just wanted to know like what to do.
Right.
What do you do in this situation, Ben? So I woke up a couple of friends, and we put him back in his bed, and we sort of like soaked up his piss in the room, and we just dealt with it in the morning. It's like one of those fucked up college stories that like doesn't really have a tidy resolution. Like it was a thing that happened. It introduced me to the idea of a piss drunk in a way that really like it made me paranoid the rest of the term that we were roommates. And
yeah.
That, oh God, like we're going to go to a party.
Yeah. Is this that beer that puts him over the edge into peeing on me while I'm sleeping?
I was piss battered.
Yeah. But. The only, there's a, our good buddy, Chris Bowman.
He's not a piss drunk, is he?
He's not a piss drunk, but, the only time I've ever like flipped out at somebody for being up in a room that I was sleeping in was he and I were bunked together the first year I went to Max FunCon, and I had never met him, and I was just told that I was going to have somebody else also sleeping in the room. But I went back to the room and like went to sleep before I had met him or like made any contact with him, and he came in like 3 or 4 hours after I had already gone to sleep. And I have no memory of this, but I apparently like got up on the bed in karate stance and like was like, "Who the fuck is that? Who are you? Who the fuck are you?" And just scared the daylights out of this. Like Chris is like one of the sweetest people in the entire world. And I was in like DEFCON 1, you know. I was like sending my birds out, and yeah, something he'll never forget, and I will never remember.
I had a fun roommate at Max Fun Con who got so vomit drunk off of the free booze that he totally remodeled the bathroom. Like, one of the great things about Max FunCon is that you have separate bathrooms and separate bedrooms, so that, like, even when you're bunking with someone, you don't really have to cross paths if you don't want to.
Right.
But that person's odor crosses paths with yours, especially when they have vomited in the shower, in the bathroom, and around the toilet of their own bathroom. So the next morning, I roll downstairs, and I'm like, oh, Max FunCon roommate, what is going on?
Oy.
And he's like, oh, man, mistakes have been made. And, yeah, that was a thing.
That's when you coined the term nerd Rumspringa, right?
It was. Yeah, that's a form of Max FunCon roommate. I've got weird roommate luck, Ben.
Yeah. Well, Garrick is in Bashir's room because he wants to go on a road trip. He's picked the dead of
night. He does not
want
to pee on him.
No. He's got other plans for Bashir. And so they go over to wake Sisko up so that Bashir can request the use of a runabout to go to Bajor.
Well, by all means. Will one runabout be enough?
And it becomes clear in this scene that, you know, like, amidst Bashir barging in on the FaceTime with Gul Dukat and this, Sisko is, like, kind of losing his patience for his chief medical officer.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
Yeah, like Sisko is getting pretty annoyed, but Bashir is saved by the bell because Dukat gets on the FaceTime again to let Sisko know that they've run Rugal's DNA. I keep wanting to call him Rugal.
Yeah,
run Rugal's DNA and have connected him to a prominent Cardassian politician who is already on his way to the station.
It introduces an interesting urgency, right? Like, the timing of this suddenly snaps into focus.
Right,
because,
and it's like,
why would Garrick want Bashir to go on a runabout trip with him in the middle of the night? And then a moment later, Dukat's like, I'm coming over. Like, one act proves the other in an interesting way.
Right. And Garrick has been riding for Dukat is up to something the entire time. And that's starting to snap into focus. So they get their runabout and they head to Bajor. And they go to an orphanage that has, like, even littler Cardassian kids, like kids that are, like, much younger than Rugal.
It's the Inner Light outdoor playset that they visit also.
Is it?
It's like,
really?
They never took it down.
Man, yeah, you're right. And they're like, hey, like, we'd love to take a look at your records if you've got any. And the lady's like, yeah, right, our computer's broken and we don't have any money, we can't fix that shit. And Garrick is like, ha, 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 well,
oh, I dabble with isolinear data subprocessors. It's a hobby of mine.
This is one of a couple of instances in the episode where Garrick just reveals himself to be great at things.
Yeah.
In a really fun way.
Yeah.
And he's got a monocle.
Well, the joke is always like, Garrick is like, don't act like I'm a spy. I'm no spy. But then every time, like, a spy skill might be necessary for to advance the plot, Garrick is willing to reveal that he has such a skill.
Garrick, yeah, is great because even at the very end of the episode, when he's asked fairly directly if he's a spy, he still has the wherewithal to be like, I will never tell you that, but I will show you with every action. Like, what do you think watching me do what I do?
He's not like a pool hustler where he goes and pretends to suck for a long time just to lull you into a false sense of security, right?
Right. He's never sandbagging. He's just not playing pool until it's time to play pool.
Right.
And then he's doing the masse everywhere.
uh, So while they're there, there's like, you know, they're getting into the computer and getting the data that they need, and there's like loafy little kids running around, and they're like, "Hey, are you here to take us back to Cardassia?" That's a sad scene, right?
Like, there's a lot about this that isn't adding up. And so Dukat's arrival convinces Sisko that they're being played. And between Dukat and Rugal's dad, they're sort of asking Sisko to arbitrate the Rugal's custody.
Yeah, like, there's a really, like, the dad shows up, and he is conveniently wearing a red tunic so that you can tell him apart from the Bajoran dad, who's wearing a blue tunic. And, you know, he's there, like, really, like, going through some shit. Like, he is a bereaved dad who thought that his son and wife were both killed in the same bombing attack years and years ago. Like, Rugal was 4 years old when this apparently happened, and the dad is torn up and, like, eager to reconnect with this son that he wasn't aware of. And one thing that comes out at the arbitration is that, like, reconnecting with this son is coming at the cost of this guy's political career, because right. Orphans are, like, somehow taboo in Cardassian society.
Or, I mean, the idea that it can be spun that he left him behind is a great shame. Like, whatever way you cut it, it's not a good look for the birth father here. And it serves as a way for you to feel empathy for him.
Yeah. Like, are these the first two Cardassian characters that we've been given to empathize with?
Yeah, it feels that way. I mean, you get the commensurate scene between Rugal and his dad that just does not go well. Like, it's the shit show that you expect from a father and son who don't know each other, and where especially the son just doesn't want to be with the father or doesn't see anything.
Yeah. I tried your weird blue stew. I'm not into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those conflicts where you can find equal empathy. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of Rugal going to live with a stranger. That doesn't sound good.
Right.
But I also feel very bad for his biological dad, who says sincerely that he thought he died in a bombing.
Right.
With their mother, with his mother.
It's a pretty tricky deal, and the idea of a non-Cardassian, non-Bajoran mediator is a good one.
I was shocked that Sisko ruled in favor of birth dad. Were you?
I was too. It was a weird, it was really like tacked on at the end in a way that didn't feel cathartic or like we understood why. And maybe they don't need to explain the why of everything. Like, maybe that's not the point, but
this is a show that relishes the courtroom scene, though, and the appeal being made, and the argument, and the counter argument, and the cross examination.
But they use that all up to pull Dukat's pants down instead of deal with the storyline that we've been dealing with.
Right. All Bashir has done this episode is like burst into rooms that Sisko's talking and interrupt him, and that's what he does here. Like, Sisko's about to drop the gavel. And Bashir's like, "Hey, check it out. Guess who are mortal enemies, basically? It's Dukat and Rugal's dad, Padar." And this has been a thing the whole time. Like, Dukat set this up to make this dad look bad.
Dukat's like planted Rugal like a seed years ago. It's not even clear. It's actually kind of implied that this is not in fact the same Rugal that Padar lost, like,
really?
Yeah,
I didn't get that.
Oh, I totally got that. Like, this is an orphan. I mean, if Padar had been separated from his child and this child had been found and recovered, like, that child would have gone back to Padar at the time. But instead,
the DNA test, though, Ben. What about the DNA test?
But we have to take Dukat's word for that. Dukat's the only one that had access to the DNA, and is like the only people we know he told about that is the Federation.
The proof of this is super interesting. Like, the long game that Ducat has played here is pretty incredible. Like,
yeah.
this orphanage is full of Cardassian kids who were just gathered up on the street, you know, quite randomly. Rugal being the only orphan who was actually brought there by another Cardassian,
right,
and who actually had a name, mm-hmm, and all that. Like, his circumstance for being there is totally different, and it feels like the con that it is.
Yeah, Padar left Bajor because being in Bajor was too painful for him after the death of his wife and child. Went back to Cardassia and, as a politician, started to campaign for Cardassia to end the occupation. And that meant Gul Dukat lost his job as the head of an entire planet.
We don't even see Sisko deliberate.
Yeah, I think we find out about his decision just in a station log.
I think what he did is he took a note from that admiral who made the decision a couple episodes ago about abandoning the station, and he's like, well, if I want to ever become admiral, I need to make decisions that fast. And he sticks Rugal with his biological father, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you think this is the right decision, Ben?
I mean, I think the cool thing about it is that in a few years, Rugal will have, you know, some experience with Padar. He'll be living on Cardassia, and he can write a financial literacy book called Bajoran Dad, Cardassian Dad. It's going to be on the bestseller list for months. It's going to sell 40 million copies, Adam.
O'Brien does that thing where he gets really nice to the house guest that's about to leave. And it's like, hey, Rugal, you can come back and visit anytime, and I hope you do.
Just let me know, like, give me a couple weeks' notice, you know?
Yeah, I might be out on a mission at that point, but good luck, or whatever.
Alamarain, come to Ford. Alamarain, come to Ford.
What are you doing now?
And then the button is the bookend, Adam. Back to Garrick and Bashir cutting it up over coffee and croissant.
Just notice the details. They're scattered like crumbs all over this table we regularly share.
Yeah, one of the great breakfasts. I used to be team big breakfast until I met you, and now I'm all about coffee and croissant.
Yeah, man. The French figured it out.
Sure did.
The French can bring the breakfast and the dessert. I'll let the Spanish sort out dinner.
It's coffee, croissant, and four cigarettes. Feeling ready for the rest of my day.
I'll tell you what. Japan and Mexico, you can trade days for lunch.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I really did.
Yeah, it feels like we poked a lot of holes in it as we talked it out, but it is still a super strong ep.
It's funny, I'd say that the much more often situation is we watch a bad episode and then have a ton of fun talking about it.
Right.
This was maybe like the rare, really good episode that we like wound up finding more problems with in talking about it.
Yeah, but I think that was a fun exercise. Like, you know, much like the conceit of the entire show, criticizing a thing doesn't mean we dislike the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to play like fantasy showrunner about,
right,
about stories like this, you know?
Yeah, the number of negative reviews we have on Apple Podcasts by people that don't understand that is possible is still amazing.
So much is amazing about what we're doing here, Ben. One of the most amazing things we do is read Priority One messages. You want to see if we have any of those?
I would love to.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Anna. It is for Kevin, and the message goes like this. 1 year ago, I gathered a message from everyone you know to wish you a happy birthday. Well, we've made it a year later, and now I'm shelling out all by myself.
Oh, no.
It's been a great year of pod. games, silliness, and joy. You're still the best boyfriend, and I am the luckiest gal. Happy birthday to the GM of my heart, my very own Uxbridge. Love, Anna.
I'm just hoping that everybody that Kevin knows hasn't been done away with like so many Hoosnock.
Yeah, Anna did away with all friends everywhere. I don't think that's the case at all. That's great. That, you know what, this is a repeat P1 is what Anna's saying. She shared the load before, now it's her burden alone this time. And you're a lucky dude, Kevin. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Kevin. Adam, our next priority one message is from Justin, and it's for Lucas. And it goes like this. Happy number 2 birthday to Lucas. We have a lot in common. We both Ralphed on your dad in 12 years. You can play this for your friends to become the coolest kid in school. And coolest is spelled K-E-W-L-E-S-T.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe as cool, same spelling, as your parents Brian and Cindy. They are both persons of special conscience. Advice: don't buy a glass table and check out Static for dirt on your pop. Go, Pack, go!
Hey, that got my attention.
I'm reading the preferred time slot, and this is about a month late for the preferred time slot, but it sounds like this is a P1 for a 2-year-old, so I don't know if being late is necessarily a problem.
Well, being late is how they got into this mess. So, so I guess it's related in that way. If you have a message that you would like to send anyone else for any occasion, or a message of the commercial nature in which you want to tell our greater viewership about a product or a business that you want them to know about, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. We have such a great big audience, Ben, that it's a great thing for you, and it's a great thing for us, and that it's a positive way to help the ongoing production of our show.
Yeah. Thank you for all of that support. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
It's hard in a Garrick episode to choose against Garrick.
Seriously.
And so I'm not going to. I'm going to choose Garrick, but because he's so obvious, I'm going to choose a specific part of the Garrick story. When they go to the orphanage,
yeah,
and Garrick goes buck wild on the computer, but then he has that interaction with the lady who runs the orphanage. There is an attitude about him. Like he is so 10 out of 10 on the read.
Yeah.
That is just a delight for me.
I was in the underground.
Really? Perhaps we have met.
Like in any other circumstance, it would read as totally condescending.
Right.
But for Garrick, it just seems like dramatic and something that would be said with like a massive hand gesture. Like his hand gesture is his face. he's just great.
Yeah.
And so my Shimoda is Garrick, but it's for that scene entirely at the orphanage. He's just fantastic.
Yeah.
What about
that's a
you,
fun
Ben?
Scene. I don't think it'll come as any surprise that my Shimoda is also Garrick. And the scene I want to give special citation to is the one where he wakes Bashir up by just being in his room. Like,
you got to get some locks on those doors, right?
I don't believe that locks would be a hindrance to Garrick. Like,
Garrick here's the thing. Like, isn't that a great backstory, though? Like, tell us that there are locks on all the senior staff's doors, and then show us that Garrick has broken in. I want to know that.
I bet Garrick's honey stick collection really puts Quirks to shame.
We're probably meant to assume that, right? Like, obviously there are locks on the doors, and obviously Garrick has defeated that.
Yeah, but just being like the decision making process of I'm just going to be looming over Bashir's bed. It's like I know you've got game, dude, but you could have just called him.
Like, really gave me piss drunk flashbacks, Ben.
We had a friend in college who mistook his own closet for the bathroom one time, which was...
Oh, and you didn't steer him away from his own closet?
We didn't know.
What a terrible person you are.
We found out the next morning when he found one of his sneakers was full of pee.
You know, the more I tell this story, the more I hear from people about the piss drunks in their life.
Yeah.
And I've heard stories about people like pissing in utensil drawers in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Pissing in cat boxes.
Right.
Pissing in all sorts of things. It's bad. It sounds like I'm making fun of it, and in the moment I was, but this is an affliction I'm really glad I don't have.
Yeah, for sure.
I love the idea that when I get too drunk, I just fall asleep.
Yeah, and I'm like, there's something also just nice about having enough experience with having a drunk on that you don't get yourself into trouble.
I think most of my life is built around a scaffold of not wanting to be a burden on other people. And so I'm really glad that like my drunk is basically self-contained and not something for someone else to clean up.
Right. I'm not anybody else's problem.
Right.
Yeah. There's a pal in our circle in college who threw a New Year's party. I was not at this party, but word got around that at some point at this dude's New Year's party, like people had, it was, you know, New York in January. So people had gone over to his apartment and everybody had put their winter coats on the bed. And somebody had gone into the bedroom and just barfed on the bed.
Oh.
So there was barf on like 25 people's winter coats.
Oh, no.
It was like, and the bed. It's like the most heinous thing that you could ever do. And nobody knows who the culprit is, you know? It's just like one of those, like, somebody is the world's worst drunk and, you know, deserves to be fully excommunicated.
Yet they walk the streets.
They walk the streets in anonymity, unpunished for their dastardly crime.
Oh my God, Ben. I would not have rested until I found that person.
Yeah. Thankfully I was not at that party, and I'm going to go on a limb and say I don't know that I am friends with anybody that was at that party anymore. Not knowing like who all was there, but
I'm really a petty asshole, and that and like I probably wouldn't be friends with a person if they had done that.
No, that's the worst.
Like I would end the friendship over that. Control your drunk. This is the thing that me and my wife talk about all the time. Is like control your party is a refrain that we have. Like, we are each other's lifeguards in life, in love, and everything else. But, like, you have a responsibility. Control your party.
Right.
Gotta get that cold press latte. Get that
cold press latte.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I right?
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVS.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month. For a limited time at ritual.com/scarves, start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
Oh, God, I got to find out, don't I?
Sure do.
The next episode is season 2, episode 6, Melora. After failing in love with a woman whose species is unable to walk in, quote, normal gravity,
Bashir develops a technology that could free her of her wheelchair forever.
I'm kind of thinking that should be falling in love, and it's like a typo. Let's see what Netflix has. What do you say?
Let's see it. Let's see if they do this better.
Netflix's capsule is, the crew welcomes Ensign Melora Paslar, a cartographer on a mission to chart the Gamma Quadrant. Wow. Oh, gotta watch.
I think we've talked a lot before about how non-ADA compliant DS9 is.
Yeah. This is the writers writing at the set design department.
And the set design department creating the set at the writers.
Right. Yeah. There's a big rift. A lot of enmity between the two people.
It seems like for a time, Bashir's love life was an A to B story, and we left that behind fairly early in season one. And now it seems like we're returning to it. So hopefully he's not as much of a creep show as he's been.
Bashir seems to be substantially a different character this season.
I feel like in the off season they really like, you know, sometimes you go to camp as a team of creatives and you like break your season out. I wonder if that's what they did. Like, went to summer camp, wrote the season, righted some wrongs, made Bashir a less creepy person.
Yeah.
He sure seems less creepy in S2.
I wonder if Alexander Siddig wrote them like a letter and said like, "Hey, listen, love working on the show. Wondering if my character could be less gross."
You remember that whole thing about Biff Yeager and how he got like mail sent to him about how much they wanted him to remain on the show? I made no such solicitation.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm getting inundated by mail telling me what a creep I am.
Yeah.
I'd like that to stop.
Listen, guys, I'm an actor on Star Trek, and I think one thing we all know is that unless you're Patrick Stewart, that pretty much will be the last thing you're known for. which is fine. You know, I'll get paid $20,000 to go to a convention 4 or 5 times a year for the rest of my life, and I'll get residuals from this. All of that is great. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I don't want to be synonymous with creepazoid.
Well put. Ben, do you want to see if we're going to do the next episode in any particular way?
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
We're on square number 10.
Yeah, we are right there on square number 10, Adam. Should I roll these dice?
Only if I blow on them first.
And we've generated a 4, Adam.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Square number 14 is a blank square, which means we are back to normal running for this show. I think that's a good thing.
Well, Adam, I'm sucking at the last of my Coco No-Nos here. We've got an exciting week coming up, do we not? I believe the next episode is the first of our Max Fun Drive episodes.
Oh, really? That's great. Max Fun Drive is one of my favorite times of year. It's when basically we harness the resources of our viewers to ensure the survival of our show into the future.
Max Fun Drive is the time of year where we basically raise all of the all of the listener support that keeps this thing going.
Like, it's easy to become a cynic about the things that you consume and just think that, you know, if I just coast, this thing's going to keep surviving without me and it's okay. But I'm here to tell you that, like, all of our support for the show is meaningful and all of the support for the show matters.
Especially a little show like ours, you know, we're not even close to being the biggest podcast in the world. And
we're not even close to being the biggest podcast on Maximum Fun or on the day of the week that we come out.
Yeah.
Like, this is not, and it's not an ambition that we have. What we want to be is self-supporting enough to make the show that we make week in and week out and also do extra fun things for our listeners. We want to be able to go out on tour. We want to be able to create extra shows as rewards for our supporters. Like, there's so many more things that we want to be able to do, and we really can't do that without the support of our viewers. So this is a really important time for the show and all the shows that Ben and I do going forward.
Yeah, so that'll be starting next week, and it's the best time of year to become a new supporter because there's lots of cool prizes and incentives to doing so. So keep your eyes peeled and your wallets primed.
Thanks to Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for all that great interstitial music. Want to shout out especially all of the people who have assembled our social media groups on Facebook, Reddit, and Twitter.
Let's thank all the people that contributed to our Wikipedia article, which is like the coolest thing, and the legions of people who must have contributed to our Wikia page, the Greatest Gen Wikia, which has just a total wealth of information about the backstories of jokes and keeping track of drunk Shimoda's. It seems like they've kind of teamed up with Colin Dinsmore, who's always making the Drunk Shimoda leaderboard.
Yeah.
So there's like a great collaboration taking place there.
I want to thank Bill Tilly for continuing to make great and funny fake Star Trek cards based on the jokes that we tell on the show. I feel like it's been a while since we shouted him out, and he's one of the great, great friends of our show, and we love him a lot.
Bill Tilly, 1973 on Twitter.
Right. I want to thank Ann Kilzer for giving us the vessel from which we are enjoying our boat drinks.
Yeah. Thank you, Ann Kilzer. I want to thank all of the friends of DeSoto out there who keep this party going. So much love to all listeners everywhere.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. In an episode of The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, that has forgotten the plot to the next episode.
We're too drunk. You can't remember a plot for that long.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.